You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
As far as Patriots, you know, they have their own thing going, and I've really been focused on what my how my play needs to be at quarterback, the execution I need. And, you know, they're not really an opponent of mine. Obviously, I have a lot of friends there, a lot of great relationships, but they've been focused on what they need to do, and I've been trying to focus on what my job is.
Yeah, he's like, I'm cold down here shopping for new cribs in the sunshine. Stop me if you heard this before. The Falcons blew a lead. Tom Brady led an impressive 17-point comeback against the Falcons in the second half, but he still can't avoid the questions, obviously, about how his ex-team is doing. Max Kellerman, has Tom Brady proven that he actually needed to leave New England?
No, he has not. How many games did he win last year? He ain't going to win 12 games this year. No, he has not proven that. There is real value in staying with a franchise as an iconic player. Look at Derek Jeter or Kobe Bryant or Tim Duncan, one franchise their entire career. And I think it's likely, had Brady stayed in New England, they'd have a better record than they have right now. And their record ain't that bad. It's two games below 500, a couple plays away from being significantly better than that. And I think Brady probably would have made those plays. No, I don't think he'd be better, that he's proven anything, other than if you give him an embarrassment of riches, if you give any solid NFL quarterback that Bucs team, you know, Jameis gave the other team 30 interceptions, 112 points over the course of a season. Everyone knew you just replace that with the guy who's going to take care of the ball. They're going to win a couple extra games, and they won seven games last year. And Brady gives you a premium over that, sure. But what does it prove? Does it prove he needed to leave New England? No. Look, if Tom Brady in these playoffs makes it to, say, the NFC Championship game, the way Joe Montana in his post-Niners career made it to the AFC Championship game with the Chiefs, quarterbacking the Chiefs, if Brady does something like that, I think he will have proved that point. But we haven't played the playoffs yet. We don't know what's going to happen. And if he does that at that point, maybe I'll sing a different tune. At this point, no. All we know is he's going to have a worse record than he had last year as the Patriots quarterback.
He proved that he needed to leave New England the moment he signed with Tampa Bay. Had he signed with another team that didn't have any weapons and he just went to them instead of staying with Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniel, and the New England Patriots, you would have a point. But the second he signed on and he had Mike Evans and he had Chris Godwin and he had O.J. Howard at the time and Cameron Brate, and that was before he acquired Rob Gronkowski and Antonio Brown, all right, and Leonard Fournette, by the way, okay? Before all of that, this dude had Ronald Jones with Evans and Godwin and Brate and O.J. Howard when he first signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That in and of itself, that moment proved that he needed to leave New England because of what he was saying. I'm a quarterback. I want to be able to throw the football. I want to have people to throw the football to. And no one has accused the New England Patriots of having those requisite weapons. We know that they're exceptionally well coached. They're exceptionally well organized. We know the familiarity and the relationship and chemistry between Josh McDaniel and Tom Brady. We also know that they always have personnel on the defensive side of the ball, and offensively they can run the football, and they have Mr. O'Reliable in Julian Edelman. But the bottom line is when you look at their wideouts, when you look at what they have available to them, okay, particularly once Rob Gronkowski retired because he just didn't want to be there any longer, the fact that he signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who were loaded with weapons, that was the moment he showed you he needed to leave New England. Because it wasn't just about being there and being the quarterback. It was about having fun playing the quarterback position because of the people that you'd have available to throw the football to. That's the difference. That's what I say about it.
Well, if you read the question, like he proved he needed to leave New England as Brady needs more, then yeah, he does need more because he is in decline. But I will point out that there are different, and if he wants to have fun throwing to receivers, fine. But I will point out there are different ways to lead a team and to quarterback a team and to get to the promised land. And I don't believe that Brady wins a Super Bowl on this Bucs team. And I don't think it's because it's the rest of the team. I think Brady is still a good quarterback, which is amazing at his age. I don't think he's an elite quarterback. And that speaks to you pointing out how much help he needs. But the bottom line is, on a defense first and run on offense kind of team, Brady won 12 games. Like, you know, they lost that last game of the season to Miami. They lost in the playoffs to Tennessee. But he won more games last year playing, quote unquote, no fun football with Bill Belichick without those weapons than he is going to this year on a team with so many receivers, he doesn't even know, you know, where to throw the ball. It's such an embarrassment of riches and talent on the defense. And that's the truth.
Well, listen, when you talk about the question itself, has Tom Brady proven he needed to leave New England? When you talk about that, Max, you're talking about things that he could do to contribute to winning. Excuse me. The man has 6 Super Bowl rings. He had 9 Super Bowl appearances in 18 years. So if anybody has earned the right to want to win a way different than how he had been winning, who's earned that more than Tom Brady? So if Tom Brady decides, okay, I did it your way, I did it from a system perspective, I did it with this same coordinator, I did it with the same head coach, I did it despite the fact that there's plenty of years that you asked me to go out there and come to the rescue because of what we didn't have, what's wrong with him saying, hey, I've now reached the point where I'm older and I want these weapons, these toys to play with on a football field the way some other quarterbacks have had it? What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with it. If that's his goal, is to go out there and have fun and see if he can win that way, there's nothing wrong with it.
And
but
Steve,
has he proven he needed to leave? Stephen A., if he gets, he don't have to win it. If he gets to the NFC Championship game, I stand down. He proved his point. He ain't there yet.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It's something that until, you know, I got into the league rookie year that I didn't realize how hard it was to win in the league. We just have to, you know, stay in there and realize that as long as we don't go chasing waterfalls, we're going to be in the game. We don't want no scrubs. I mean, we got some dogs outside. So we got guys that we're very proud of.
Okay, Baker, I hear you. A little TLC reference in there, as long as you're not creeping. Stephen A., I'm going to start with you here. Are you more confident in the Browns after their Sunday night football win?
Yes, I am. But it's not really about this Sunday night football win. Listen, I'm impressed with what the hell I'm seeing from Baker Mayfield. How many times have I joked about him having more commercials with Progressive than wins? Obviously, we had to address weeks ago his wife coming to his defense and what have you. Baker Mayfield is balling. We have to give credit where credit is due. 25 touchdowns, just 8 interceptions on the league. He threw 21 interceptions last year. It's at 8 now. He's completing about 64% of his passes. That's better than he's done in his career. He's not beating these guys. He's not beating himself, rather. And then how many games? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. His last 7 games, the last 7 weeks, Baker Mayfield has thrown 1 interception. Just 1. I got to give credit where credit is due. I'm looking at Cleveland, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, top 3 rushing attack in the National Football League. I'm looking at their defense, got some holes in it, but they try to address some things. And I'm looking at him not beating himself and not forcing the Browns to beat themselves. I'm looking at his footwork. I'm looking at him reading through his progressions. I'm looking at him looking off defenders and what have you. I'm just watching him right now. Kevin Stefanski is a Coach of the Year candidate because of the phenomenal job that he has done. What a significant upgrade from Freddie Kitchens. But I can't leave Baker Mayfield out of the equation either. The coaching that Stefanski is doing. You know, the GM, Andrew Berry, a brother, an African-American, doing his thing. Pay attention, NFL. Yes, black folks can be executives too. Thank you very much. Okay? So you got Andrew Berry doing that. You got Stefanski doing what he's doing. You got Baker Mayfield balling the way that he's balling. And the Browns elevating their level of confidence. I got to give credit where credit is due, man. I'm impressed with what I'm seeing from them. I'm more confident in them now than I was weeks ago. I can promise you that.
Maybe than I was a couple months ago, but not than I was last week. I'm the same amount of confidence. You know, I think they can win a playoff game, and that's about it. I need to see them do it against the Ravens or the Steelers, the two big brothers in the division. And they haven't beaten them yet this year. They'll have a chance against the Steelers last week of the season. Let me say this about Baker. Stephen A., do you remember when we were told at one point that he was that Baker had said something about you and we were all prepared to come out and you had something to say about it. And then we saw the video and listened to the audio. And in fact, what Baker said was, after you were critical of him, in fact, what he said was, that's those guys' jobs. That's, you know, that's all I can control. And he said every single thing right. He didn't throw, you know, grenades at anyone. All he did, or shade anywhere, he just focused on himself. Baker has had, now when you look at it, 4 head coaches. At one point, it was over the course of 2 seasons, really. Hugh Jackson, who was the worst coach in the league at the time. Greg Williams, who was so bad, he made a play call this year that probably ended his NFL career. Freddie Kitchens, who was a disaster. And now the first time he gets a competent guy in Stefanski, he's doing very well. I thought I had a lot of patience with Baker Mayfield. When my patience ran out, I said, okay, he's not that great. Learn the lesson again, more patience. He is doing very well, and he deserves a lot of credit for the way he handled the failures and persevered, and he deserves everything that's coming to him now. But that doesn't mean I like this team to beat the Steelers or the Ravens when I haven't seen them do it. When I saw them just beat a Giants team, and I had hopes for the Giants because I was wearing rose-colored glasses, right? I want them to be good. I'm a Giants fan. But the fact is they had their backup quarterback in Colt McCoy. Colt McCoy couldn't get anything done. They couldn't get anything done in the red zone, the Giants. They really don't have an offense. They never score many points. They didn't again against the Browns. It's not that it's like not a quality win. The Giants can play some defense. They can do some things. But I'm not changing my opinion on the Browns based on a game against the Giants. I think the same thing I thought in the last couple months. The Browns are a playoff team. They're a team maybe that could win a playoff game, but as of right now, that's it.
Listen, the Browns got wins Indy. I'm saying the Browns got wins over Indy. They've beaten the Colts. I'm looking at that. And I looked at that win over Tennessee when they dropped 41 on the Tennessee Titans. You bring up the Ravens. You bring up the Pittsburgh Steelers. But there are other teams in the AFC that they'll have to perform against. It might be Kansas City. You know, we're not picking anybody against Kansas City. But also, you got to look at the way they played Baltimore last week, even though they came out on the short end of it, how they beat the Titans, how they beat the Colts. We got to pay attention to that, and then we got to think about the playoffs itself. obviously, they didn't play Buffalo. But the point is that when you look at it, Buffalo, Tennessee, and Indy may be there. And if they're there, can the Browns beat one of them? Yeah.
You know who you sound like right now? You remind me of Smokey trying to pay Big Worm in Friday when he took out the money and he counted it was 1, 2, 3, and then he flipped it over 4, 5, 6, right? The Bills. You tried to make the Indianapolis Colts sound like two different teams in the AFC. You gave them credit. They beat Indy. They beat the Colts. They know the Browns are okay. They can beat the Colts. They can beat a team like that. But they don't have that many wins against that caliber team. They have wins the Titans? Against teams like
didn't
the Giants.
Didn't I mention the Titans?
What's that?
Can I ask
I didn't mention
question?
The Titans?
Yeah.
I didn't mention the Titans?
You did. You did.
Oh.
You did. I'm saying, okay. To me, the teams they got to beat. Right. Like, beat your rivalry teams first. Beat the guys in your own division one time this year.
Right.
They'll have a chance against the Steelers.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
It's what we're all waiting for. Opening night, tomorrow night, NBA season. And it is my honor and privilege to have our next guest approaching his 7th year as commissioner of the National Basketball Association, the one and only Adam Silver. How are you, sir? Thank you for being on the show.
I'm great. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Let's get right to it, because before we get to any on-court stuff, obviously, we've got to get to a lot of things about this global pandemic that's basically taken over this world right now. About 9 months ago, had to postpone the season, March 11th, because of COVID-19. Now you got through the season, started it back up at July 30th, had a phenomenal time in the bubble, not one positive test, but now we come into a new season. Talk to me for a second, Commissioner. When you talk about players, coaches, league personnel getting vaccinated for COVID-19, can you talk to me about that? How are you guys going to go about doing that?
Sure. Although we're somewhat in the dark, not unlike most people.
Yeah.
There's no way we would ever jump the line in any form whatsoever. And for the most part, because our players are young and healthy without some sort of comorbidity, they will not be a high priority for vaccinations. I mean, there are some other members of the NBA community working, on court who are older and will have a higher priority to get the vaccine. But as I said, I mean, we will, I think, very likely be part of some public service campaigns. We've already talked to the CDC and other governmental agencies about that, encouraging people to get vaccinated when it is appropriate. But up till then, as I said, we'll just be watching and waiting.
Like you said, when it's appropriate, you'll definitely encourage people to take the vaccine. What if players refuse, sir? How is that going to be handled by the NBA?
First of all, we don't have the right, short of a negotiation with their union, to require them to get vaccines. And I'm hoping it doesn't come to that. I mean, I understand, that some people don't want to get vaccinated. I think a part of it will be a public education campaign. I'm also hoping that as more people get vaccinated, it increases the public's confidence in the vaccine and the testing protocols they've undergone thus far in order for the government to, in essence, verify that it is safe. But I think as time goes on, I think more people will recognize the importance of getting vaccinated. And again, not just for themselves. I mean, this is a conversation we've already begun with some members of the NBA community. Again, for young, healthy people, while it's still an incredibly serious disease, they tend to do better than older people or people with underlying conditions. So for our players, ultimately the reason to get vaccinated may not be to protect themselves. It may be to protect their parents, their grandparents, and other members of the community.
When people talk about the NBA as it pertains to COVID-19, you guys are the standard because obviously you were very, very successful in the bubble in terms of, just making sure that there were no positive tests. It was a phenomenal job by the league, the players, everybody involved. But now we're talking about something that's not a bubble. It's 30 different locations. You got 30 teams in the NBA. They're playing. How is the NBA going to be able to enforce protocols in 30 different locations? It was hard enough, I imagine, doing so in a bubble.
It's a fair question, and it's going to be a very different operation being outside of a bubble. I mean, as you know, there were all sorts of issues going into the bubble, and we weren't sure how that would work, and it ended up working in many ways far better than we thought. I mean, now that we're going to be in essence, 30 different markets, or and completely outside of a bubble, there's no doubt we're going to have issues. We've been watching closely what's been happening, not just with other leagues, college sports, et cetera, that are playing outside a bubble. And even, Stephen A., I'd say, aside from violations of protocol, we know that even people who are following all of our rules exactly as intended, that when you're living at home, you have children in school, you have family members who are out and about, no one is immune from this virus. I mean, we saw it when our players first came into training camp just a few weeks ago. We had essentially 50 positive cases just to begin training camp. And this is not necessarily because anyone engaged in reckless activity. It's because they're living their lives like most other Americans are. So, I mean, we'll have all kinds of procedures in place to attempt to assure that our protocols are followed. And of course, to the extent they aren't, we'll address it. And I think one of the conversations we've been having with our players' association is we may have to adjust our protocols as we go, depending on how things are working. But to your point, this is going to be a far different environment than being in a bubble. And there's no doubt, I think, it's highly likely that there will be cases based on what we're seeing in society around us.
Last question on this particular subject. I know you, how optimistic that you are, and you don't like to, even though you take all matters into consideration, worst case scenario and beyond, you certainly don't like to think that way. Can you foresee, is there any kind of scenario that you can envision where this season can ultimately end up being postponed again? And if so, specifically, can you speak to what's being done to make sure that's prevented?
Well, first of all, is it possible that the season could get postponed? Of course. I mean, nobody can predict precisely the trajectory of this virus. I mean, it's been terrible, frankly, and hundreds of thousands of lives have been lost just in the United States, and it continues to rage in many ways. And this is something very new that we're doing. Again, watching closely what's happening in the NFL and baseball, and baseball did an incredible job under the circumstances, and so is the NFL now. But those are outdoor sports, they're in stadiums. Just as when we went into the bubble, we couldn't be sure how things would play out. Now that we're trying something new, an indoor sport, again, different protocols that we haven't had in place before. I think we wouldn't be acting responsibly, and I wouldn't be acting responsibly if I said it's just full steam ahead no matter what. Having said that, I mean, based on our experience in the bubble, we have a fair degree of confidence in our approach. But again, we're in constant discussions almost daily with the Players Association, certainly daily with our team of medical experts who will be watching over what we're doing. And it's one thing to get through training camp and even a preseason. But once we go into the regular season, it's an enormous amount of travel. Our teams essentially play every other day. We've made, some changes to the schedule and some travel changes to help reduce the chances of an incident. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, as the vaccines begin to get, you know, as adoption continues, as, you know, tens of millions of doses begin to get distributed, that will have an impact as well. But, you know, the answer is we have lots of alternative plans in the drawer, and we'll just see. I think, you know, we're going to go forward as we are. We have, as I said, a fair degree of confidence in it, but I want to make sure everyone understands that the safety and health of our players and all the participants are our number one priority. And if any time we feel that's being jeopardized, we will stop.
Commissioner, let me put a smile on your face by getting to on-court matters. Giannis Antetokounmpo, affectionately known as the Greek Freak, elected to sign a 5-year extension in excess of $228 million. I wanted to know, how big of a deal was that in your mind, not just for him, for the city of Milwaukee, but for the league, the fact that he decided to stay in a smaller market? Talk to me about what that means to you.
I think it's a huge deal. In essence, it means that the collective bargaining agreement is working as we designed it. I mean, as you know, it's no secret, we build in huge incentives for players to stay in the market that drafted them, both in terms of signing extensions and then ultimately, you know, renewing their contracts there. And there's enormous financial incentives. And the goal is in our league, in that, especially with the huge explosion in social media and the distribution of our games globally, the goal is that players are making decisions based on the quality of the team they're playing for, the belief in the community, the management of the team, all those factors, as aside from just the absolute size of the market. And I think that the Milwaukee Bucks have done an incredible job surrounding Giannis with you know, a roster that is championship caliber. I think that the community has embraced him, certainly in terms of personal accomplishments as multiple MVPs and globally known. I think what we're seeing here is that a realization from Giannis that at this point now it's about winning, not being in a market that may have more people. So again, I think it's a very positive sign for the league.
We can't have the NBA commissioner on and not ask him a question about the best player in the world, who would happen to be LeBron James, an NBA champion for the fourth time in his 18th season. He's approaching his 18th season now. Can you speak a little bit about what he has meant to the league, what he means to the league right now, particularly in the midst of a global pandemic, in terms of how he's conducted himself and how he's led the Lakers to their 17th championship? Can you talk about LeBron James from the standpoint of what he means to the league right now?
Sure. I think one of the most important things that people in the league know, but maybe a lot of fans don't, or people outside of the league, that in addition to being arguably the best or one of the best, of course, players in the league, he's certainly one of the hardest working. And I think that has as much to do with the longevity and success of his career than anything. And I'd say, for example, Stephen A., I spent several weeks in the bubble. I visited a few times earlier during the restart of the season. You frankly, other than seeing him on the court, you wouldn't have known he was there. I mean, he was so focused on his game, so focused on his body and taking care of himself, that that's the commitment and dedication that has enabled him to have a career as long as it's been, and to continue playing at an MVP type level at this age and with all the miles on his body. So that's his on the court activity, and off the court, I think it's incredible what he's continued to do. He led a huge you know, voter registration and engagement initiative. He's been, you know, very outspoken on things that affect him and his community and his family and our country. So I'd say, you know, I'm incredibly proud of him personally, but I think he's a marvel in so many ways. And again, though, so much of it comes back, whether it's his on the court activities or off the court, are his focus and dedication.
Transitioning from him to Brooklyn, New York. On one hand, you've got KD and Kyrie in Brooklyn, which is a very, very big deal, because obviously when you got two of those stars on your squad, you're considered a title contender. On the other hand, you've heard the stories about Kyrie and how he didn't want to speak to the media. You saw a report by ESPN's Tim McMahon where he highlighted some of the things about James Harden and the latitude that was given to him by the Houston Rockets organization. How do stories like that affect you? How do you believe stories like that affect the league in the eyes of the public? What are your thoughts about that?
Look, it's not just the stories, as you know. It's not only about the media. It's about the actuality of what happens at some teams. And I only say I think we all know that it's nothing new in professional sports, or certainly in the NBA, that not everyone's happy at all times in their situation. And a lot of those issues have been compounded by the pandemic. Look, face it, you know, that for the isolation that has come with it, for many people being away from friends and family in the bubble, or even now, you know, lives altered in so many ways. I think it just further accentuates, you know, issues that we all have. And I think those aren't stories, you know, you like to see. But again, even if they weren't reported, there's no question that there are issues that happen at teams. I mean, ideally, from a league standpoint, those issues are handled behind closed doors, you know, and that guys are able to work out issues with their teams. In some cases, guys end up getting traded because that's what the team wants to do rather than that's what the player wants. In other cases, it's just bad chemistry on a team or change in circumstances, changes in GMs and coaches, and those things work their way out. I would say in the case of both James Harden and Kyrie, you have like extraordinarily talented people, complex people also, who again, I mean, many ways like LeBron, it's not just about life on the court. They're multidimensional people. They feel strongly about lots of issues around their community. And again, I, you know, at the end of the day, you just want to see them be able to focus and have great seasons. And it seems like in this case, both situations have settled down. You know, I think Kyrie, I think, recognizes at the end of the day that talking to the media is part of his responsibility as a player. And it's not really just about the media, with all due respect. I mean, you all are a proxy, you know, for reaching our fans. And it's part of how our fans can engage with our players in our game to understand sort of what players are thinking about and what they're doing. And I think James, you know, I saw the media he did last week. He said he's focused on his game and being in Houston right now. And look, he's got some great players around him. And let's see what happens once the season starts. Ultimately, that's what puts a smile on my face. That's what's so exciting, to be back to NBA basketball.
Absolutely, getting back to NBA basketball. But I'd be remiss in neglecting to bring up Kawhi Leonard as well, because you guys are investigating, the league is investigating, allegations made against the Los Angeles Clippers and consultant Jerry West about the recruitment of Kawhi Leonard. What can you tell us about that, and how far along you are in that investigation? What can you speak on in regards to that?
All I can say there is, you know, everyone is entitled to the presumption of innocence. Obviously, someone that is not known to me or to the league office has made an allegation against the team. And so we'll look into it. It's our obligation on behalf of all 30 teams that if something comes to our attention, you know, we look into it and we see if there's anything there. Again, I have no reason to believe, based on what's been alleged so far, that there's anything inappropriate that took place, but that's why we follow up on whatever leads come to the league office. So that's all I can say right now.
Commissioner Adam Silver, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for making sure that we have another season to look forward to tomorrow night, opening night. I can't wait. I know you can't wait. And I'll see you soon. Thank you so much for being on the show. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen A. Thanks for having me.
All right, the commissioner is giving us a gift this holiday season, 5 games on Christmas Day. So be sure to watch Get Up and First Take Christmas morning as we count down to tip off. All right, excellent job, Stephen A. Thank you so much. Max, I want to come to you on this. I have the utmost respect for Commissioner Adam Silver. He came across as transparent and authentic and empathetic. Obviously, we know this is going to be a fluid situation, but he's also very confident, and they have many plans in place. I found it interesting that he said his players aren't going to jump the line in terms of the vaccine. They'll follow the normal protocol, yep, and they're not considered high priority, high demand, you know, being healthy and of a younger age. What really stood out to you from what the commissioner had to say with Stephen A?
That was number one. I mean, chronologically, the fact that they wouldn't jump the line, he's responsible. And then that I you know, I took notes on the interview, Stephen A, that he doesn't coerce. He's not coercive with the players. He admits that without stipulations in the CBA, for example, he can't force anyone to have a vaccination in order to play, even if they were widely available. But he seeks to persuade. Both the responsibility and the seeking to persuade rather than coerce are traits of a real leader. He admits what he doesn't know about how the season without a bubble is going to work. And that attitude also shows humility and maturity, which is needed to tackle that kind of a challenge. That's leadership. He also said, by the way, the Supermax extension is working. You hear that one? The way it was intended. The league wants stars to stay put and wants all those markets to be competitive. What's interesting about Silver is this all fits the profile and about the way he seems to see the players as partners, as opposed to the NFL, for example, which seems to take a more kind of authoritative position versus the players, and a more antagonistic one, and vice versa with the players to the NFL. So all his kind of style of leadership, I think, was on display there, and it's promising for the NBA.
Can I say something to y'all that both you, Max, and Molly, that I think is going to be relatively controversial, but I don't give a damn because it's how I passionately feel. I am not one, and could y'all put me on the three screen because I want to see Molly when I'm saying this as well. I'm not, you know, first responders, people who have obviously questionable health situations and are in desperate need of it. I'm not talking about them. Of course, they come first. But this notion, I can't stand, and I actually, we didn't have much time, so we were limited in the time that we were going to have, so I didn't go too deep into it. But I get tired of hearing leagues say, we're not going to jump the line, because I think people are looking at it wrong. And this is the controversial part, it could be, that I want to say to the public. When I think about basketball and I think about football, I'm not thinking about the players. I'm thinking about the thousands and thousands and thousands of people they employ. And so when I think about if you have access, if you have the means because you generate revenue, and as a result, you can get to the head of a line. And I'm not talking about a head of those who are ill. I'm not talking about those who are in need. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying them first. First responders, first, get all of them. Hospital workers, health workers, first. But outside of that, once you get down to it, I inherently have a problem with this notion. We're jumping to the front of the line because I think people are thinking about the players and the performers. I think we're forgetting about the thousands upon the thousands upon the thousands of people that are employed and are looking to work. And don't want to end up unemployed and don't want to end up on a food line. They don't want to end up in those conditions. And I think it's, and not only that, they're the ones roaming in the streets every day, hustling and bustling, working their 9 to 5 or beyond to get themselves in position to provide for their families and to be healthy and risking their health in order to do it. So what I'm saying is if you're a league, a multi-billion dollar establishment that ultimately generates that amount of money, for the modern day workers out there, and you feed the economy and you're able to feed folks, you know, salaries and things of that nature. If you can get them vaccinated, I don't see a problem with it. That's my issue when I hear leagues talking about we don't want to jump to the front of the line, because I think rightfully so, they're very, very concerned about the PR backlash they'll receive if indeed they were getting to the front of the line. But I think people who are ready to excoriate them, it's because they're thinking about multi-million dollar athletes and those associated with them. And they're stopping there and they're not thinking about the hundreds of thousands of people who are employed. It matters.
Well, I think that's an interesting point to bring up. And it's a legitimate point to bring up. And I would say, especially when the government's only sending out checks, this $600 that's supposed to get everyone through the winter. You know, people who are out of work, they're supposed to live on $600 through the winter,
yes,
which is absurd. But I would also say that leadership at the very top, or a lack thereof, such as only $600 checks to people who need the checks, that does create a kind of a rat race environment, right? Where it's every man, woman, and child for themselves. And if you can hoard, if you can get your hands on some vaccines, then okay, that's more important because that'll keep the economy going, and that's so important. Yes, that environment is created with a lack of leadership at the top. I agree with that. Stephen A., I would also say that I might even sign on to that idea were it not for this factor. You keep bringing up people with pre-existing conditions. You know what the number one pre-existing condition that's most by far positively correlated with death by COVID? Age. That's the pre-existing condition. The elderly really need the vaccination. And there are millions and millions and millions of them. And so I like to see the way a kind of the national character, right? Well, how a country treats their elderly. I think that's important. And so if not for that factor, I might even sign on to what you're saying and say, guys, there, you know, we do live in a world where this is an economic engine, et cetera. And if there are lots of vaccinations, maybe they will jump the line. I don't think they can.
But that's what I'm saying. Take care of them first. I'm not implying by any means to jump ahead of those. I'm saying take care of them. That's who I'm talking about. When I say those who are in need first, take care of them. But don't be worried about the PR backlash. Do what you can to facilitate. Listen, JT the Brick hosts a radio show on Sirius XM. I've known him for years. That's
JT,
my guy.
I go way back.
I love
with
him.
JT.
He does a phenomenal job. JT and I go way back. JT came up with an idea because the NFL was entertaining what they're going to do for the Super Bowl. JT the Brick came up with a phenomenal idea. He said, you want to pack the stadium for the Super Bowl? Make sure you fill them with first responders and all of those folks who have sacrificed and paid the dues. Make sure they're vaccinated and fill the stadium with them. I think that's a phenomenal
idea.
In other words, the NFL has the means. The NFL has the means to pull it off. The NBA and other professional sports leagues have the means to facilitate those who are in dire need of a vaccine being taken care of. I'm just saying, once that's done, don't worry about the PR backlash, because you might have the means to jump ahead of some people if indeed the goal is to make sure those thousands upon thousands of people remain employed. Let's make sure we remember that. Get them vaccinated. Get them taken care of.
Let me get in here really quickly, Max,
because I don't think what you're actually saying, Stephen A., is controversial, because I think at the end of the day, we're talking about the game of life, game of basketball. We all respect the fact that the first responders need to be taken care of. I have a cousin who works in the ER in Massachusetts. He had just said to me he received his first vaccine. Obviously, there's two doses. He has to wait another 3 weeks. It's very promising. Just someone in my inner circle. But then at the same time, if we're talking about the pre-existing conditions, taking care of them, and then obviously taking care of, I think it's considered 65 plus for the elderly, I think they will do that. And then I don't think that's considered jumping the line. Then I think they would take care of the NBA players in that next group. So what you're actually saying, I think, is what is going to happen.
Well, I'm not talking about just the players. I'm talking about all of those folks employed. You're not just giving the players vaccine. You know, the people that come and work at the stadium and the arenas night in and night out, they're going to be around those players. Mm-hmm. If you take care of the players but you don't take care of them, who knows what trouble that could cause? I'm saying let the leagues take care of the thousands upon thousands of employees they have working for
them. I get what you mean. Even concessions, security, all those things. And if the players are
the
vaccine, they will be protected. Yeah. That's what it sounded like.
I'm just talking about the head of the line, Max.
And my point, Stephen, point about the elderly is
don't be concerned about going to the head to take care of them.
Sure. Like, don't worry about a PR backlash. Worry about the actual ethics and morality of the whole thing. I agree, and I presume that that's what they're talking about, too. But there are so many people in the country over the age of 65 who knows if there's even enough vaccinations to go around, because as Molly said, you need two doses to cover this season, right? I need to say something about JT the Brick's idea. It's a great idea. How often is a trip to
the Super Bowl
shown to be this this amazing prize? That is a great idea.
Fill it with first
responders. People in the stands at the Super Bowl.
Fill a stadium.
They could be filled to capacity. Everyone with two doses of the vaccination. The first responders. I love it.
That's right.
No question. It's a little way also to say thank you. I mean, it's something that we can do in terms of our part to say thank you there. But one last thing I just want to say quickly, and Stephen A. Max, you can respond. And this is not in any way just, trying to kiss up or anything. But Adam Silver, I mean, talk about working for a guy like that. When I said he comes across as so self-aware and down to earth and compassionate, yet confident at the same time, he just comes across as such an exceptional leader. And obviously we saw what he did with the bubble, and we have confidence in what'll happen moving forward, barring any of another COVID outbreak. But there's really is something special about him as a commissioner. He just does such an exceptional job.
Well, I've known him for years. He's a special man. And I think the thing about, listen, you know, everybody has their thing, and, you know, they can't always let you know everything and allow you to be privy to everything and what have you. But here's the deal. In the end, he has done what most great leaders do. He's proven he's trustworthy. He's highly intelligent. Mm-hmm. He's very thoughtful. He's very giving, and he's fair. And when you have those components and you have to work with 450-plus players led by Chris Paul and LeBron James and others, plus Michelle Robbins as the executive director and what have you, and you prove that your word counts and you can be trustworthy, you can be trusted, that goes a long way. And Adam Silver has achieved that, and he deserves a lot of credit for it.
I would point out that he's the commissioner of a league and with a lot of difficult issues, including Donald Sterling. He handled that right. The issue with China and Daryl Morey, he handled that right. The one thing after another, and in the middle of riots, social justice movement, pardon me. That's a bad mm-hmm. kind of co-opting of a social justice movement by people without great intentions, and it affected me just then. With social justice movements and issues, they were wearing Black Lives Matter on their uniforms. Kaepernick still doesn't have a job in the NFL. That's quite a commissioner, Adam Silver is.
Yeah. Listen, last thing I'll say, talking about the pandemic, it'll be really good to have NBA games back for all of us to watch. We can all enjoy that.